Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, we have Brody Smith, disc golf professional. We're getting into the Frolf world. We don't call it Frolf anymore. We call it disc golf. We are ready to roll. We call it banging chains. We've got Duke out of the tournament. We have Russell Wilson maybe to the Bears. We have Firefest the week. And we also have Seamhead Express, where there's enough baseball news that we combine it all into one Seamhead Express segment. So get excited for that. Great show coming to you.
Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started.
Okay, let's go. Boy!
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Bar School Sports.
Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by Black Rifle Coffee. Go to blackriflecoffee.com right now. Use code TAKE and get yourself some coffee. Today is Friday, March 12th. PFT, I want to do two intros just in case. The first one is, Today is Friday, March 12th. Russell Wilson is officially a Chicago Bear. And then in my non-dream scenario, today is Friday, March 12th, and the Duke Blue Devils have been eliminated.
Either way, it works out well for you. Well, no, the Duke Blue Devils have not been eliminated. They did the right thing. They're looking out for the health of everybody else. I kind of had to pull a 180 on Coach K today. I think I love him now. I think you at least have to respect Coach K for being one step ahead of our brains that try to simulate what Coach K will do. I think the last that we got inside his own head, we're like, he's just going to write a book about how well he managed this COVID year. And then that's going to be his, like, anointing himself as, like, this was actually a successful year because we got through it and the health was the first thing that we had to look after. Like Andrew Cuomo, like, writing a book in the middle of it, congratulating himself. I thought that's what Coach K would do, but he's one step ahead. They have bowed out gracefully after winning their opening round game in the ACC tournament. And I guess this means that the streak is still intact, right? Because who knows? Maybe Duke would have gone on to win the ACC tournament. It's actually a brilliant move on Coach K's part.
Well, here's what Coach K gets to do. In a year that was not great for Duke, to put it mildly, wasn't Duke's year, they get to finish winning their last game of the season. They actually won two games in the ACC tournament. They want only one team usually gets to finish the season winning their last game of the year. Duke gets to claim that this year, that they won their last game of their season. They were hot. They were just getting hot. They were just finding their groove. And then COVID, who maybe it was his grandson who got it, which that's convenient. But guess what? I'm a COVID survivor, so I'm not going to make light of the COVID. I can say that as a COVID survivor. I can say maybe it was his grandson, and maybe this was a long con by Coach K to basically bow out of the season before the selection committee could not select Duke next Sunday or this Sunday. I'm a COVID survivor, so I can say that, but that might have happened, but I'm also not going to say it because I respect COVID too much.
Yeah, and also HIPAA laws. You don't want to pull an Adam Schefter. But if that were the case, you would have to acknowledge the fact that Coach K is a mastermind for inserting that into the storyline. Who knows if the person who actually tested positive for COVID actually has COVID. I wouldn't put it past Coach K to just be like, we need one of you walk-ons out there, any one of you guys, to take one for the team and just tell me that you have it. Just somebody please tell me that you have it or that you were a close contact with somebody that has it.
Or just encourage them to go party.
That way, yeah, maybe he sent somebody on the team like to go infiltrate a frat party. Who knows? Who knows? But at any rate, it's hats off to Coach K. You did it. You outfoxed the Foxes, and I have no choice but to respect you on this one.
Do you think that if we could get Coach K's cell phone right now, or maybe one of his assistants, maybe John Shires, or his computer, the first Google result would be how to get a positive COVID test in Greensboro, North Carolina?
Yeah, probably. Or, yeah, or he just bought like a series of Sharpies and just went writing out results for fake tests. Like, he just bought a bunch of pregnancy tests and then wrote COVID positive on one of them and then showed it to the ACC officials. They're like, sorry, guys, we got to bounce. We got one.
I wouldn't put it past Coach K for him to go to the hospital himself for the next, 4 weeks just to stave off these jokes. Like, Coach K is – he'll do anything. He's Frank Underwood of the mm-hmm. college basketball world. He will do anything to make sure that the message is not, hey, Duke wasn't going to make the tournament. Let's all forget that they weren't going to make the tournament. Hey, let's talk a little bit more about the fact they weren't going to make the tournament. Nope. We have to respect COVID, which I do as a COVID survivor, and say I hope that Duke is healthy and its students first.
Well, we don't know that they wouldn't have made the tournament, but Kat, that's what makes this so magical. It's like Duke could have gone on this run. They could have won the entire ACC tournament. They could have cut down the nets. And you know what? I think the last time that Coach K played in a full ACC tournament that was run to its completion through no fault of his own, they did cut down the nets, right? 2019?
Did they win it, Jake? Jake?
Virginia won it in 2019.
Virginia won it. But that's okay. That's okay. We can just pretend.
Also, four teams cut down the nets. You have the NIT, the CBI, and the CIT winning.
That's true. Those teams do. Good point, Jake. So Duke's just one of four teams that wins their last game. And,
senior night.
There's no Ivy League this year.
Yeah.
But usually Ivy League, because they only play, they used to do only one team gets to the tournament, regular season winner. So technically some of those teams could have won their last game of the season. But either way, it is always an accomplishment to say that you won the last game of your season, and Duke can say that. I forgot how chaotic conference tournament week is. It is overwhelming. It's sensory overload. There are so many games on. There's so much basketball. It's absolute heaven, and I don't want to keep going, but this is actually – we're taping this on Thursday, obviously, and it's a year to the day of, when everything stopped, and it's just crazy, just going back to last year and being like, yeah, we missed out on all this. I'm out of practice. You know what I mean? It's like trying to run a mile if you haven't been on a treadmill in forever. The amount of sensory overload I have right now of college basketball – I need a weighted blanket and a sound machine and a dark room. I need a Mike Leach dark room to make sure that my head doesn't get more concussed.
Listen, this is everything is new again.
Yes.
So you can look at it that way, like you're going through anxiety because there's too much stimulus going on. You're not used to that. But you can look at it like I'm experiencing this again for the first time. And Jake, I'm pretty sure 2019 Duke won the ACC tournament. Did I just make that up out of my head?
Oh, I was thinking NCAA tournament.
Okay.
Oh.
Hmm.
Interesting. It would make
2019 ACC tournament Duke champion.
Yeah, because Zion. It was Zion, right?
Yeah, it was Zion. Yeah. Okay. So it was LeBron Lockwood's year.
And the CAC bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So, Jake, would you like to say anything to me?
I'd like to apologize for answering the wrong question.
All right, you're suspended for a week and a $50,000 fine.
Jake, would you like to talk at all about your boy Jim Boeheim and the Syracuse Orange? I love when Syracuse Northwestern's not good enough in basketball, but Syracuse obviously is a basketball school. I think that's what when we had the Blue Blood debate a month ago. Blue Bloods, there are six Blue Bloods, and then the next rung is basketball schools. Syracuse mm-hmm. is a basketball school, and there's something about Syracuse when they lose a heartbreaking loss, and you get all the big J's and all the check marks coming to Twitter bemoaning their Orangemen. So, Jake, this is – you can speak for all of them. Speak for rattle off some names real quick.
Ian Eagle, Marv Albert, Bob Costas, Mike Tirico.
No big deal.
Pete Thamel. We've got Steve Gold. I can name
all business Pete.
Yes, all business Pete. Also, I'm not part of the blue check mark true yet.
True, true. Okay, so go ahead. Give us your thoughts.
Not yet.
As of this morning, I was the last. Syracuse was the last team in. I think it's a true 50-50 shot, and Syracuse fans are very used to this position. When it was my senior year, they were in this. They were the very last team in. I think it depends on how the bubble teams around them do. But the bubble's kind of breaking for them right now because you have Duke, who's out of consideration. You have Xavier, who took themselves out after a loss to Butler. You have three Mountain West teams who are going to beat up on each other this weekend. So I think it really is 50-50, but gut says yes.
Do you think that maybe Coach K pulled his team to do a little favor to his buddy Jim Boeheim? Those guys are thick as thieves.
They are good friends, but I don't think he would do that.
I also have a point of contention. I don't like that Buddy Boeheim is 6'6". That's way too tall for a buddy.
I think he's good for Buddy Boeheim. Buddy Boeheim to be by far like the worst player in North America.
He was amazing in this tournament, but he is such – he truly is like, 10-year-old basketball, the coach's son. Whenever he hits one shot, he's like, I'm going to take the next six shots. He just keeps shooting, knowing that, like, what's going to happen? His dad's not going to bench him. You think his dad's going to kick him off the team? Like, come on. And I love seeing that play out in, like, major college basketball.
Yeah. Yeah, Jake, so we were talking earlier. What was your initial reaction to seeing that three go in, the UVA, the heartbreaking dagger?
I just said, like, oh, no, crap. That stinks. And I got over it after 30 seconds.
But then you also said something very big, Jay.
What? Oh, it was great for the sport.
Yeah, it's great.
Any March buzzer beater is great for the sport.
It's great for the sport.
That's I love it.
You guys suffered a heartbreaking loss at the buzzer, but then 30 seconds later, you know what? Grow the game for the kids.
Yeah, 100%. Any buzzer beater viral shot is amazing. I love it.
That's as big, Jay, as it gets.
Yeah.
Wisconsin hasn't played yet. I assume they're going to beat Penn State, but that probably is a terrible assumption. Michigan State lost, which was the rat line of the day. But I think they're safely in because they did beat three out of five top five teams, or three top five teams in like the last two and a half weeks of the season.
My Izzo take is looking better and better year after year. But there is something weird going on this year where it is like, the best teams historically all stink, like across the board.
Yeah.
So there's kind of strength in numbers on that. If it was just Duke that had this type of a season, I feel like it would be more satisfying for us to pile on them. But we've got these other schools like Michigan State and Kentucky that are distracting us, and UNC distracting the concentration of our takes that should be concentrated on one school. So it's kind of unfortunate that we don't get to just pile on Coach K 100% this year.
Yeah, like Kentucky was legitimately bad. I think they finished the season 9-16. They were not good. They had maybe one or two. They had that big win against Tennessee, and they had maybe one or two other games where you could say, oh, they beat someone decent. But for the most part, they were just a really, really bad team. I also had a thought. We need to have an account that tweets out what the jerseys are before every single game. Because I made a bet today. I bet Baylor minus 20. It was a stupid bet. It was a terrible bet. They won by like four. But I bet the bet because I was like, you know what? Baylor's awesome in the lines. Sometimes you say, oh, this line is way too high. That means they'll probably win by 50. Turn on the game. Kansas State's in their all blacks. And it's a completely different game than when they wear their candy ass purple. So like that, I knew instantly I had lost that bet. So I need there to be an account that basically says, here's what everyone's wearing today. Make your bets accordingly. And I know that sounds stupid, but my retort would be, no, you're stupid if you think that uniform colors don't matter.
Dude, the all blacks, when a team's wearing an all black uniform that doesn't always wear that all black, it's like a normal one, that is absolutely boost. You see yourself in the locker room. That's like a game that you have circled before the season starts. It's like, that's the one where we're going to be murdered out in our all blacks. And players definitely get hyped for that. That's why I don't bet on Baylor and I don't bet on Oregon because I don't know. I never know what uniforms they're going to show up in. If they show up in like the highlighter, if Baylor shows up in the highlighter yellow, I'll always be like, damn, I should have bet on them. But then if I'm expecting the highlighter and they come out there wearing like white with forest green trim. I'm like, well, I'm fucked.
Yeah. And my other uniform take from the last few days is Vanderbilt on Wednesday was they were wearing uniforms that made them look like it was like practice uniforms. It was as simple as it could get. I think teams should start wearing uniforms based on their records. So if you're a really, really bad team, you should really, you should actually be wearing your practice pennies. You should, you shouldn't even get to wear real uniforms. And then when you start to get better, you get to actually wear like the nice ones or the throwbacks. So that way you can almost like, you look at the, you look at a game and instead of just seeing the records, you're like, oh yeah, that team sucks. They're actually, they're in shirts and skins. Like Northwestern should just wear no, they should have to be in skins against Minnesota last night. Minnesota should be in their practice pennies because that's how bad the game was. And we should know when you turn it on to be like, turn this off because this game is so bad. Don't watch it.
Yeah, or like when it's an extreme example of an alternate color. Like today, Arsenal, they wore blue.
Ooh.
And it took me like 5 minutes to figure out which team was Arsenal into the footy match. And I was like, that's too much, it, especially if you're playing against a team that's wearing red. I don't like that.
Yes, I agree. I don't like the alternate jerseys in soccer are fucking wild.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern for the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1. Every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the Holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
PFT, you're an insider.
Uh-huh.
You fancy yourself one. You do insider, usually have good information.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me that Russ Wilson is going to be a Bear.
Russell Wilson's going to be a Chicago Bear, Big Cat.
Do you actually believe that, or are you just saying that to make me feel good?
I would never say anything to make you feel good. I think that Russell Wilson's going to be a Bear. I think that I don't know if that three-way trade that we discussed earlier this week is going to happen because the Texans are being real cagey with Deshaun Watson. But I think that if we're looking at the teams that Russell Wilson would hypothetically want to be traded to, if he were hypothetically wanting a trade for himself, which he's not, I think that the Bears are far and away the most likely destination. And it breaks my heart because I know that you mentioned earlier that Big Ben could have been a Bear, and that is really what we should all be rooting for. Big Ben just being miserable in the cold weather. Although it kind of doesn't feel right picturing Big Ben living in a city. He's not a very cosmopolitan guy.
Yeah.
He's a guy that should be like out in the – he'd probably live in Wisconsin.
He'd live in Kenosha.
He'd commute down to Chicago every day. Although it would be very funny to see him, like Big City Ben, getting all dressed up to the nines, going downtown the Loop. But I do think that Russ Wilson is going to be a Bear. If I were to put money on it, I would say yes, he will be a Bear.
Well, so the Big Ben thing, that was my Fire Fest of the Week. It is the saddest thing to see that the Bears are in the mode, though, where any quarterback – at all, they're just going to say they're in on. Like, the Bears are in on Patrick Mahomes right now. They've made a phone call. I've seen them in on Sam Darnold, Big Ben, Deshaun Watson. Like, everything that gets discussed, the Bears are pretending. It's essentially, you know, very relatable to this time of year. It's the Bears are opening up their Excel spreadsheet at their desk so when their boss walks by, they don't realize that they're actually just, you know, watching games and gambling on games. The Bears are pretending to call every single quarterback out there so that they can say, well, at least we tried, when they inevitably trot out Nick Foles next year and say, whoops, we didn't see that coming. So, the Big Ben news made me sad, but I also was like, there's no way that this was ever going to happen. The Russell Wilson, you just said you would put money on it. That's where this is all coming from, because they took the odds off the board in Vegas of the Bears landing Russell Wilson, and then they upped the Bears' Super Bowl odds or lessened them, and that's where all this smoke is coming from. And part of me thinks, like, Vegas always knows, but I can't let myself make that leap where, like, the Bears have an exceptional quarterback. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't compute in my brain. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but real, like, deep down, if you ask me, I'd be like, there's 0% chance Russell Wilson becomes a Bear.
And if he does become a Bear, I'm just preparing you for this, but he is definitely going to look shorter in the Bears uniform and helmet. That is going to shrink him like 2 inches.
I'll tell you what's going to happen if he becomes a Bear. Almost instantly, he's going to put out like a double album with Sierra, and like he's going to care about is being a celebrity and not football. And he's going to instantly just lose all his football powers. I guarantee you. That's what's going to happen. There's going to be a double. He's going to put out an album. He's going to be singing on an album, and it's going to be like Russell Wilson wants to be a global star, and football's like, you know, football, whatever. It's family's more important.
It's time to start thinking about life after the game, Big Cap, because this game can only take you so far. Yeah, you have to plan your future. And the second that Russell Wilson put the New York Jets on his hypothetical list of teams that he would want to be traded to, and the Bears, that should have been like a big time red flag. Like, okay, something does not really make sense here. Because Russell Wilson had a pretty good football setup, I think most people would agree, in Seattle. You could have done a lot worse. And then putting the Jets on that list, it's like, okay, something different's happening. Ciara definitely wants to start thinking about her career first. She's sick of the natural beauty of the Pacific Northwest. She would like to see some buildings around her occasionally.
Yes. Did you see, by the way, speaking of the Texans, did you see Jack Easterby finally released a statement?
About what?
About everything that's going on.
About, like, did he do it more stand-up, like people in Houston?
No, he released a statement about Deshaun Watson and everything that's going on with the Texans. He said, I have learned to kiss the wave that throws me against the rock of ages. Charles Spurgeon.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. I love Jack Easterby. What a beast. What a beast.
Jack Easterby. We should make those shirts and sell none of them.
Hell yeah. have him just standing in front of a brick wall with a spotlight on him and a microphone, but he's like, I don't know, maybe part bat with blood dripping from his fangs. Wings, Easterby. Talons.
And it's just Deshaun Watson in the background with like a piece of paper that says, please trade me.
Booing him. Yeah. So, I mean, credit to Jack Easterby. I've been wondering what has been going through his mind for the last couple of weeks, but it's good that you can always count him to step forward and issue like a broad generic quote that doesn't really say anything.
Yeah.
So good for him. I still don't know what the Texans are going to do. I've kind of become resigned to the fact that maybe they're not going to trade Deshaun, and Deshaun's just not going to play this year.
I kind of respect the fact that they are just flat out saying we're not taking calls. It's such a weird, bizarre thing to not even entertain the idea of the quarterback that clearly wants to be traded. And you can offer, I mean, you can get it. It would be the biggest haul of any trade in NFL history. I would guess, right? Like you're getting a franchise quarterback, the guy who had arguably, like, I mean, you want to say Aaron Rodgers probably had the best year he won the MVP, but given their surrounding, he probably had the best year of any quarterback last year. He's 26 years old or whatever it may be. You get him for the next 10 years, and he's going to be happy wherever he goes because he's just going to be out of Houston. You could get, like, the Rams. If the Rams didn't trade for Matt Stafford, the Rams would have given up. Like, you know how there's sometimes there'll be universities that will do 100-year leases. The Rams would have given up 100 years of first-round picks.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about the fact that Jack Easterby, obviously he's like a Rasputin guy, right?
He's
very much a con man. Con men like that always have like one person that they respect, one person that taught them everything they know, one person that has always like loomed large as a father figure in their lives. That person for Jack Easterby, I think, is Bill Belichick. So Bill Belichick could exert influence and like do mind control shit on Jack Easterby, and he's probably the only person in the NFL that could convince him to change his mind and deal Deshaun Jackson. And plus they've got Nick Cassero down there too, right? So it's like these are all former Bill Belichick guys that are in Houston. Bill makes a couple phone calls, says the right activation words or whatever, convinces him to trade Deshaun to New England. I don't even know what trade capital or assets they would have to give up. But I think if there's one person that can crack Jack Easterby's iron will, it's Bill Belichick.
It would be like the Patriots would trade a first-round pick, a 100 Bibles, and a renovation, a promise for Bill Belichick to renovate the team like chapel.
Yep. Oh, yeah. If he built a mega church, if Bill agreed to finance a mega church with Jack Easterby's name on it in Houston, Texas, in like a suburb in Katy, Texas, and it's like 50 square feet bigger than Joel Osteen's, I guarantee you Jack Easterby makes that deal right now.
Oh, man. What a. This is by far the most fun offseason when it comes to quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, we've already had the Big Ben back and forth, the Stafford trade, the Goff trade, the Carson Wentz trade, and then still on top of all that, we have Deshaun Watson and Russ Wilson and Jameis Winston all looming.
Yeah, Jameis is still out there.
Oh,
Jameis is going to be a hell of a consolation prize. Yeah.
Yeah. Drew Brees hasn't retired.
Yeah, Sean Payton made a remark today. I think he was on Morton Anderson's podcast, actually. And he said, you know, I feel like we're all going to have a real better understanding about what's going on with Drew's situation in 2 weeks. So even Sean Payton doesn't know what Drew's going to do.
I think he's going to try to come back. I really do.
The hair kind of sold me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he just is – he got a little bit healthier in the offseason and is like, you know what? I could still throw 75% completion percentage.
Yeah, 5 yards down the stats. Field. Yeah, he opened up his stat book. And you know what's also really weird about this offseason of quarterbacks? The football team, we're just not doing anything. We just don't – there's just no football acquisitions happening in or and around the quarterback position in Washington. I guess our position is maybe we'll just go with Taylor Heineke again. Kyle Allen, he's a pretty good – we've got two great backups. And I think we're just going to roll with that.
You know what? I'm going to throw this out there, PFD, and this is based on zero knowledge at all, but I think there's a chance that the Bears and the Washington football team Freaky Friday it, and the Bears end up with Alex Smith and the Washington football team ends up with Mitch Trubisky.
I'll take it. I will become the world's biggest Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I would become the most diehard Mitch Trubisky fan in the entire world if he played for the football team. That'd be awesome. Wouldn't it for this podcast? What if Mitchell Trubisky became a Pro Bowl quarterback?
No, it'd suck for me.
It would, yeah.
If I went from dreaming about Russell Wilson to Alex Smith and Nick Foles, no. If you could figure out a way to, like, Dr. Frankenstein, put Alex Smith and Nick Foles together, they still wouldn't be a good quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Tiny hands, huge dick.
it's the worst combination.
They look like
actually,
a ductile platypus. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're taking pictures, it would look like a tube of cookie dough.
Yeah, your fucking dick is a monster. All right, let's get to our interview. We got an awesome interview with Brody Smith coming up. We bang chains, we disc golf, we froth. I seriously cannot recommend this interview enough. It's one of those ones where we do something a little different, and I walked away being like, that was awesome. He's a cool guy, and I think we found our new best sport. So get ready for that. PFT, you had something you want to tell people before we get into that?
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
And now, here's Brody.
Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. It is Brody Smith. He is a professional disc golfer. I know not to say frolfer anymore. I am now saying the correct term, disc golfer. Also had a past life as a professional ultimate frisbee player. Has an awesome YouTube with trick shots. Fuck Dude Perfect. Wait, have you done a video with Dude Perfect?
I've done three.
God damn it. All right, this interview's over.
Wait, what? Rank them. Give me a power ranking of the Dude Perfect guys. And Beardo's last, right?
Shit. Wait, what are we ranking them on? Like actual trick shot abilities?
How much you want to kill them?
How perfect they are. How perfect the dudes are.
No, they're all good dudes. They're all real good dudes.
We know they are. We actually watched their documentary and we came away with like, damn it, what, like, we've hated them for so long, but they're actually all pretty good
dudes. It seems like they're nice guys. Except I like Purple Hoser, number one, and then Beardo comes in last. Because you know his dad, he's the manager.
Yeah.
He's pulling all the strings, putting Beardo front and center. I know we love the Rage Monster.
But we're not going to put you in a bad spot. We're very happy to have you on. We want to talk some disc golf.
We're going to talk about your career, which is fascinating. I was reading up on it before this interview. So you are a professional disc golfer now, correct?
Yeah, officially. I guess you don't really become a because it's kind of weird. It's like skateboarding and maybe a couple other sports where you can literally just say you're a professional without actually having any sort of what
I'm
is that actually? But I would say you probably turn professional when you actually start accepting cash.
Okay.
So I think I'm slowly accumulating because I just started playing disc golf last year. Some cash under my career earnings right now. So yeah, I guess you would say I'm a professional disc golfer at this point.
So like, just on a basic, we're just trying to understand it because I actually really do want to play. And thank you for sending the different discs. How many? Like, is there one league? And is there how many tournaments are there in a given year?
Yeah, so it's kind of an ever-changing landscape, but they have the Disc Golf Pro Tour, which is very recently, I think it's only been around for about 3 years or so. And it's basically someone that has come in and is trying to be creating like an actual league. Before then, it was just basically anyone could kind of run tournaments, and some tournaments would be a little bit more popular based off of the course. Some tournaments would be more popular because they have – you know, more added cash. But now they're actually getting to the point of where there's an actual pro tour where there's, you know, anywhere from 13 to 15 different events throughout the year. I just got done playing one out in Vegas. I'm now actually in Waco, Texas, for the second stop. And it kind of goes all over the United States. And we actually even go over to Finland. It's, I believe disc golf is the number one sport in Finland.
Oh,
I love it.
Yes.
So over there, it's absolutely crazy. Like if you look up the European Open on YouTube and watch some footage from that, it will look like a golf tournament. There will be 5,000 people walking down the sides of the fairways. It's insane. And the courses that they have over there are structured in a way where they look like golf courses, but for disc golf. So it's pretty wild.
So what are the main events in the United States on the current tour? Are there majors?
Yeah, so the big one is Worlds. That one, it's considered a major, but if you win Worlds, it's kind of top dollar. And then after that, you have the United States Disc Golf Championship, which is also another major. The tournament I was talking about is called the European Open, which is over in Finland. That's the third major. And then they just started the fourth major this year. It hasn't been done yet. So that one, no one really knows about that one yet. I think it's called the Champions Cup. But they're doing an interesting format for that one. So people are kind of on the fence of whether they like it or not.
I'm watching the European Open right now. It is fucking wild. You weren't joking.
It's crazy, right?
There's so many people watching this thing. It's electric. We need to get disc golf to this level in America. So, all right, other basic questions. Why did you send me so many Frisbees? I don't need that many Frisbees.
No. Okay, so you will. So here's the thing. You've thrown a Frisbee before, right? You go to a Target and you buy a Frisbee, right? That Frisbee is going to fly the same way. No matter what Frisbee you buy, whether you buy it at Target, Walmart, whatever, that Frisbee is going to fly the same way. So in Ultimate Frisbee, you have to manipulate the disc to do what you want it to do. In disc golf, you can throw a flat shot with a disc and it'll go straight. You can take another disc, throw a flat shot, and it'll go to the right. You take another disc, throw a flat shot, and it goes left. So instead of manipulating the disc, you just switch disc completely, throw the same shot, and it'll actually have a different flight path.
That's sick.
So most pros will carry anywhere from like 14 to like 20 different discs because they all fly differently. And if you think about it, the easiest way of thinking about it is golf, you've got your woods, you've got your long irons, your wedges, and your putters. In disc golf, you basically have your putters, your mid-ranges, which are like your irons, your fairway drivers, which are like your long irons, and then your drivers. So there's like four different kind of discs that you need. And then you basically need to have each section there. You need one to go straight. You need one to go straight right. You need one to go straight left.
Got it.
Okay.
What's a putter, though? I don't understand how – like, couldn't you just throw any disc?
No, you could, but you'll feel – some discs will feel better in your hands than others. Putters will have a little bit more of a rim to where it kind of feels a little bit more comfortable in your hand, and they're super slow. So they're more similar to a Frisbee to where you're going to be able to have more control within 100 feet. Because if you throw, for example, a driver, when that driver hits the ground, it's going to skip and have a lot of action to it. You don't really want that when you're trying to throw something close to the basket.
And are there limits to the size of how big the discs can be? Because if it were up to me, like obviously you're close up. If you have a putter, just get like a trash can lid, right?
Well, that wouldn't fit in the basket. So that would be an interesting take on it. Because the basket is – the basket's kind of like three – right now it's about the width of three discs.
Okay.
So you got to – so it's a little bit big for some people as far as – because most other sports, like if you look at golf, basketball, a lot of times it's twice the size, right? So a basketball hoop's like two basketballs could theoretically fit a golf cup. Two golf balls could theoretically fit. But with the chains, and you'll see when you guys start playing – you'll have some that hit the chains and you think it's supposed to go in and it won't go in.
So do you say banging chains? Do you say like, yo, you want to go bang some chains?
Me personally, I don't, but I definitely have heard it before.
Yeah, because I was going to say that's like 90% of why I want to get into disc golf.
Is the fact of being able to say that catchphrase?
Yeah, like, yeah. Yo, let's go bang some chains this weekend. Like, what are you doing Saturday? You want to bang some chains?
Well, I got the shirt, and I'm excited to wear it and see if it helps my my putting a little bit.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Have you seen the sport growing over here in the United States? Like, are we on a path to get close to what Finland has?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say as far as spectators go because of COVID. We haven't really been able to actually have spectators out at tournaments. But similar to golf and some other sports, when you like sign up, right? Like if you sign up for golf, you get a USGA number if you want. Same with golf, with disc golf, it's the PDGA, so Professional Disc Golf Association, or I think it's actually the Players Disc Golf Association. When you sign up, you get a number. So you can see how long people have been playing disc golf because there are some people that have three digits, right? So they're like 178. So they signed up years and years ago. I have five digits right now. When I signed up, I think I was like right around like 120, like 120 or 120,000 or something. Do I have six digits?
Oh,
I might have six digits. I don't even know. But essentially in the last year, there's been like 30 to 40 or 50,000 people to sign up, which is an insane amount of increase because I think it's like 5X or 10X or something from what they normally get year to year. And some of these YouTube videos now are getting, you know, 150, 200, 250,000 views of people just watching disc golf tournaments. So it's definitely blowing up. The manufacturers in disc golf right now are trying to catch up. That's one thing that's kind of going crazy right now is you'll sell a disc for $20 and then you could literally go on eBay and sell that $20 disc for $150, $200. Because the demand for some of these discs are absolutely insane.
So the discs you sent me, I could get probably $1,000 for them.
Well, those are stock discs, so it would be tough for you to get those. But I can send you a Get Freaky, which is one of my discs, and those go for a nice little penny.
Okay. What does a Get Freaky do?
So yeah, that's my catchphrase. I got the Get Freaky.
Okay.
So when I was learning disc golf, again, like an ultimate, if you throw a frisbee. It's hard to do it. But if you throw a frisbee on like this angle, it's just going to keep going on that angle and go into the ground. But in disc golf, there's a disc that you throw it on this angle and it flips out. So when I saw that and started throwing it, I was like, dude, this is the disc you need when you're in the woods and you need to get freaky.
Oh.
And that's when it kind of caught on. And that's basically the disc that does that. I call it the Get Freaky.
Okay, so explain to me, you were Ultimate Frisbee. You know, you actually, it's crazy. People always talk about, you know, Tim Tebow and like the Joakim Noah days happened at the same time. Well, guess what?
I went to high school with Tim Tebow.
Yeah, so the Brody Smith days happened at the same time too. You're winning national titles for the University of Florida during that heyday, right?
Yeah.
So you guys probably were hanging out with the same chicks, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
But fun story about Joakim Noah, though. One day when we were running track workouts at University of Florida, he was in the stands. This was right before March Madness was starting. He's got his headphones on, hoodie on, and he's just there looking down at the thing. And we thought we were the coolest people ever because we thought he was like getting motivated by our track workouts. he definitely wasn't. He was definitely just zoning out, but he went on and won. So we felt like we, you know, kind of helped motivate him a little bit to win that back-to-back championship.
Yes, for sure.
So my question was, so ultimate frisbee to disc golf. Was there, like, what made you decide to make that leap? And were there people in the disc golf community who were like, this is an ultimate frisbee, bro. He's not welcome here.
Yeah. So short answer is knee surgeries. That's basically what ended my ultimate career. I wanted to be able to walk when I was 40, and the path I was going on, it wasn't looking good. So I kind of just needed to retire and stop running, stop jumping, stop doing all that stuff that's really bad for your knees. And then I did a short stint into golf. So I went hard into golf for about a year. I was taking lessons with Cameron McCormick, who's the famous coach of Jordan Spieth, and ended up getting pretty decent at golf. I was a plus like 2 handicap, but I was so far behind all these other people that I've been playing for forever. And also golf is freaking super expensive.
Yeah.
So I missed throwing the frisbee. I loved golf, and I was like, man, disc golf sounds like the perfect kind of animal for me. So I moved over to that. And yeah, I mean, obviously you're going to have people that, you know, have been, you know, you hear it all the time. They're like, these guys have been grinding for 10 years in disc golf, and then you popped in and now you get everything so easy. And it's like, you're always going to have haters. You're always going to have people that get upset, and, you know, it is what it is. I'm loving the sport. I'm trying to, you know, get other people involved and try it. It's a super cheap sport to do it. You only need a couple discs. Courses are free to play, and they're plentiful. It's kind of crazy how many courses there actually are if you really look into it. But it's an awesome sport, man. It's like a lot of people describe it as like an awesome walk in the woods, right?
Yeah.
Like if you want to just go for like a nice hike, it's an awesome thing to do.
Yeah. It sounds very relaxing to me. And I can honestly see why in the last year it's grown so much, because it's like the perfect sport for this time. You're just outside with maybe like a friend or two going for a walk. Perfect for this pandemic year that we've had. So,
absolutely.
So is there actual, like, is there real money that's now involved in disc golfing?
Yeah. I mean, like I was talking about earlier, the amount of money that some people will spend on discs alone is insane. And then my buddy Paul McBeth, who is also on Discraft, which is the manufacturer I'm sponsored from, they just signed him to a $10 million 10-year deal.
Whoa.
So that's massive. And I think that will kind of also help a lot of players kind of start going that way. But yeah, I mean, there's multiple people that are making six figures on disc golf, which, you know, isn't, obviously in other sports is kind of nothing, but for the infancy that the sport is currently in, it's definitely headed into an awesome direction for people that really love the sport.
So I did a bad job when you mentioned the Las Vegas tournament. Where did you finish? So how many competitors were there, and where did you finish?
I think there was 170.
Wow.
I think something like that, and I got 25th.
Okay, so you are kind of fulfilling what you wanted to do and like getting into that, hey, I'm going to start competing at this.
Yeah, I mean, the way I looked at it is in Ultimate Frisbee, it took me 3 years to get to being one of the best players in the world. I'm in just over a year in disc golf, so 2022 was really kind of the calendar year that I've circled as where I really want to start competing. And then obviously last year with COVID, I also got Lyme disease, which...
Whoa.
If you know anyone that has that, it sucks.
Is that
it's the worst.
That like, you know how like NFL players like, you know, head trauma or ACLs, like is Lyme disease the number one? Are we going to have a Lyme disease controversy in like 10 years where the league totally covered it up and we now have to, like, is that going to happen?
Well, I mean, I will tell you this. When I'm playing in certain courses, I am very smart at covering up and putting on like the tick repellent, because some of these courses aren't great. And Lyme disease is something that you don't want to joke around with it, because it if you don't take care of it seriously, it can really mess you up long term.
Yeah. So, check yourself really for ticks after a round.
Yeah.
Look underneath the
always.
Scrotum.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I've always been told.
So, hopefully you have a close lady friend at that point, and you know, you can get a little –
Check it. Friendly with one another.
Yeah.
Get freaky, right?
Get freaky. Yeah.
Freak it. I like
chains.
I luckily have a wife, so it works fine.
Sick brag, dude.
So walk me through like a round on the course, the mechanics of a round of disc golf. Are there hazards?
Yeah. So there's three types of hazards basically. You have out of bounds, which is played a little bit differently than in golf. In this situation, if you go out of bounds, you get to actually advance to where your disc was last in bounds and take it from there with a stroke penalty. They also have drop zones. So sometimes if you throw it like in the water, for example, they'll move you to a closer spot to where you still have to throw it over the water. And then when we play on golf courses like the tournament out in Vegas, they'll use the bunkers as hazards. So if you land in a bunker, you throw from the bunker, but you add a stroke as well.
Okay. And that's got to be a pain in the ass when you throw your disc into the water.
Yeah, it's not great because it's a different aspect than in golf because you hit a golf ball in the water, you're like, ah, well, whatever. And most people too, right? They'll take the range balls and, you know, put them in the pocket and use those for the water holes. Disc golf is a little bit different because you get kind of attached a little bit to your disc because you're so familiar with what it does.
Yeah.
That sometimes it's you'll see some guys actually go, you know, chest deep into the water to try to get certain discs back.
Yeah, because it's more like you're losing a club than it is you're losing a ball.
Exactly.
Have you ever had to go diving for one of yours?
Only one. I try to go the route of where once a disc starts flying differently than when I first originally got it, I just go and try to get the brand new disc again. Because some people, what they'll do is they'll actually throw the disc enough times to where after hitting trees, hitting the ground, it flies a certain way and they love it. The problem is if you lose that disc, now you have to find another one and work that one in. It doesn't fly the same way right away.
Interesting. Yeah.
And are there unwritten rules of disc golf?
Explain.
Like etiquette style. Like I'm thinking in a round of golf, you know, you don't walk in somebody else's line. You don't talk in their backswing, that sort of thing.
Like, don't vape in someone's backswing in disc golf. Like, that would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very the etiquette's very similar to golf. You know, you don't stand in between the person putting and behind the basket because that's a little bit distracting. You know, if someone's about to throw, you kind of try to stay quiet. The one interesting thing is you actually say, like, good round on the 18th tee. Ooh. So before the round's actually over, which I find that you could have some mental head games with people if, you know, a tournament's coming down to the wire.
Yeah.
You get a little like, hey, great playing with you, man. Hopefully you don't throw this one bad, or, you know, something like that, to where, you know, before they have to throw a big shot on 18 or something. But yeah. I think most of the rules are very similar to golf.
What was the hardest thing to learn, or the one aspect of disc golf that surprised you, like, whoa, this is a lot more difficult than I expected? Because I would imagine you already had a leg up being a world-class ultimate frisbee player, but what was that one thing you're like, whoa, I did not give these guys enough credit, this is difficult?
I would say the nose angle. So in ultimate, you throw everything nose up, so essentially when it leaves the hand, you should be able to kind of see a little bit underneath the disc, because that kind of gives it the lift and allows the disc to fly. In disc golf, it's the exact opposite. You actually have to throw everything nose down. Huh. So it was essentially, you're so used to throwing everything one way that then you have to just, it's a small minor adjustment, but just the muscle memory of having to learn it differently. It took a really, really long time, and it was extremely frustrating.
Damn.
How do you practice? Because, you know, you see a lot of golfers, they work on their swing everywhere they go. You can take practice cuts inside. Do you do, like, air reps with your arm, or do you have to go outside and get, like, okay, I need at least 60 yards to work on my stroke?
I think you'll see a lot of people doing that for their backhand. The backhand footwork is very similar to, like, a crow hop or an X step in baseball. So you'll see a lot of people kind of working on their footwork and timing a little bit. But for us, we don't have driving ranges. So essentially, we try to find open fields, football fields, and we'll bring, you know, tons of discs out to those fields and, you know, either drop cones out there and kind of set up our own driving ranges to just get our practice in.
We're going to get back to more Brody in a second. But before we do, this interview is being brought to you by our great friends at Roman Swipes. Most guys have tried different ways to last longer in bed. Thinking about baseball doesn't always work. The folks at Roman, an online men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes. It's the secret to longer-lasting sex. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, they're easy to use, they're fast-acting, but they don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. They're super easy to use. You just take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, you're good to go. That's it. So go to GetRoman.com/take, get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. So get the monthly plan. Congrats on the sex. Go to GetRoman.com/take. And now here's more Brody.
So I saw that you, one of the things that you thought maybe will help grow the sport is referees. Are there refs involved?
That was more Ultimate Frisbee.
Okay, so that was Ultimate Frisbee. Are there refs involved in disc golf?
It's still kind of like golf where it's, you know, players are making the call, and then if there is some sort of confusion, then there are officials or what we have tournament directors that can come in and kind of help with a call, with calls. But for the most part, it's very similar to golf where, you know, players are able to just kind of say, hey, this is where I think you went out of bounds, and take your ball there.
So I should have asked this earlier, but so when you went from Ultimate Frisbee to disc golf, was Ultimate Frisbee community mad that you've left them?
Some might have. Some probably were very happy.
Okay. Oh. Are you the GOAT?
No. I mean, I did very well in college. Did very well in college. And then I had some knee injuries afterwards. But my mindset with Ultimate Frisbee is I came in with, you know, a football, basketball, kind of that, like, super, super aggressive, super athletic, wanting to try to take the sport to the next level. And some things that we kind of butted heads on a lot was the fact of what you were just alluding to with no referees. They have a thing called spirit of the game, which is essentially someone decided to take sportsmanship and like make it something else to where, you know, there's certain things that I just didn't really fly with. You know, after a game, if I lost a game, the last thing I want to do is get into like a powwow with the other team and put our arms around each other and have the other team tell you like, hey, you guys did really good. Maybe next time. And, you know, there was just certain things like that that I wasn't a big fan of. Also, we played with what are called observers. So essentially, if you took a referee in football, you put him on the field and you said, hey, do everything you're supposed to do. But the only time you can actually enforce it is if a player asks you to. So they're there watching the game. They know when violations are happening. They see everything, but they can't say anything until a player says, hey, what do you think?
That's weird.
So the way I play the game is, let's say someone throws a disc and it's me and you, right? And the disc is floating in the air and you're standing under it like this. And I jump over top of you and catch it. And I nick you on the way up. And you call foul. Instead of what they wanted to happen is me and you stand there and talk back and forth. And like be like, I don't think I fouled you. And you go, no, man, you fouled me. And I go, I don't think I fouled you. No, you fouled me. And reenact it and all that stuff. I didn't really like doing that because there's literally someone that saw it right here that's a third party.
Right.
So I would just say, if you said foul, I would literally just say contest and I would just point to the observer. So there were certain things like that that kind of were like, wasn't the style or the culture of Ultimate Frisbee. But now Ultimate Frisbee has a professional league with referees. And so it's kind of moving more in that direction of where, you know, it's really hard for people to watch a pickup basketball game.
Yeah. So you're before your time.
But I don't know. I think I helped kind of push the sport with a bunch of other people that really loved Ultimate Frisbee and wanted to see it kind of get to a bigger scale. And essentially that's what I'm trying to do now in disc golf is if there's anything that I think personally the sport could change or do differently for more people to enjoy, I'm going to kind of speak out and say what I think. Am I right every time? Absolutely not. I'm probably wrong more than I'm right. But, you know, I feel like ideas and things don't change unless people speak out.
So what is that thing right now for disc golf? If you could change one thing about the sport?
Oh, man. Gosh, now you're getting me on my hot. I would say the easiest answer is to get rid of ratings. So In golf, if you went and asked, do you guys golf a decent amount or not really?
I understand how the scores work.
Once a couple years.
So you could potentially have a handicap, right?
Right, right.
But if you went up to like John Rahm and you're like, hey, John, what's your handicap? He'd be like, I don't know. I don't have a handicap. In disc golf, everyone has a handicap essentially. And that handicap is highly the most important thing based off of who's better than who. And it's also very subjective how you get your handicap, because you could theoretically be a really, really good disc golfer in the woods. So the only tournaments you play are in the woods. So your handicap is super inflated because you're just playing courses that suit your game. So you could say, hey, my handicap's a 2. And someone else over here says, my handicap's a 5. Everyone's going to look at you and say, that guy's way better, which is not the case. You know, if you look at golf, no one has any idea whose handicap is what. And any given day, anyone can win a tournament.
Right. They're just pros. Right.
They're all. Yeah. So I think that's one thing that's kind of holding back disc golf a little bit is the ranking system. There needs to be an actual like ranking system based off of how you finish in a tournament versus like what your score was.
That makes sense, though. That I don't even think that's controversial. We need something that will light the disc golf world on fire.
Yeah, controversy sells.
Yeah.
What's the most controversial thing that's happened recently? You guys should just like have a fake cheating scandal.
Yeah.
That will get all the headlines.
Cheat on your wife.
Don't do that.
No.
Tiger Woods. You got to be the Tiger Woods.
I am happily married. I think with disc golf, honestly, I think it's just the ability of how cheap it is and how easy it is to play.
Yeah,
I think really that's the best thing that disc golf has going for you. And once you throw, it's similar to golf. You hit one good golf shot. It doesn't matter if you hit 100 terrible ones. That one good golf shot will make you want to keep coming back out there. I think disc golf is like that, but you're going to have more than one around.
Yeah,
so it makes you keep coming back.
Is there a drug testing policy? Like, how high do you have to be to play?
Good question.
Thanks. It depends on who you ask. It depends on who you ask. There is currently no drug policy, but I hear that they're potentially looking to potentially do that in the future.
Yeah, like a PED.
But I think
a PED scandal.
I don't think marijuana is going to be on the list as like a thing. I think they're going to allow it.
Yeah, it can't be. I mean,
you can't. It's legal.
It would literally. Well, not only that, but like no one would disc golf. That's like the whole point.
Well, some pros still will, but yes, yeah. Yes.
I wonder. Ooh, that you guys should get an Adderall scandal. That would be good.
There has been talks on that because some people think that that does give you an unfair advantage.
I would imagine it does. Like it's hard to focus. So. Yeah, it's hard to focus for 18 holes of disc golf. You need a little something to sharpen you up.
Yeah. Do you think that's the reason why they say good round at the start of the 18th hole? Because, like, the first person that played was so high by then, he thought the round was over, and so he said it went all too early?
I actually have no idea how that started, but that very well could be.
So you said that you finished 25th in Vegas. Where did you rank amongst the Brodies? Were you the number one Brody?
I think are you talking about specifically people named Brody?
Yeah.
Well, or guys who have Brody vibes.
Yeah.
Oh, what's my vibe?
Oh, you're Brody.
I mean, Brodies, you know, Florida, golf, whatever, disc golf.
I imagine Brody for disc golf is like Cody for the rodeo.
Yeah. So how many Brody vibes did you beat out?
I have no idea. I don't know.
That's so Brody.
That's alpha Brody.
It might be.
You got to play in Europe. I want to go watch one of these. We got to get disc golf to be like it is in Europe. This European Open video I watched,
it looks
is
sick.
Incredible.
What do you think what do you think the best course is in the United States?
That's so debatable.
Let's debate it.
Let's do it. You guys have never played any of
I think
of
I think
there was one in Austin that was near my house, and it looked.
Oh, is it Roy G? Do you know that's the
name
of it?
Yeah, I know Roy G. They also had a soccer golf place right next to it, so I usually played the soccer golf instead of the frisbee. There was like a little budding rivalry going on there.
Soccer golf's actually legit.
Yeah,
I personally think.
Here we go. Hold on. Did you just Google best courses in the world?
No, I'm a big fuck. I like to personally play the Blue Ribbon Pines.
Oh, I haven't played that one, but I heard it's very nice.
It's dope. It's very dope. what
about, like, it's great.
What have you played on the? I'll name a couple. So
list them off.
There's the Jarva
Burgess Park,
Jarva Disc Golf Park in Stockholm.
That's the one in Finland.
Yeah, Maple Hill in Leicester, Mass.
Yep.
There's Hillcrest Farm Disc Golf in Prince Edward Island.
No idea about that
the
one.
The Canyons at Delwood Park in Lockport, Illinois. Santa Cruz de la Vega Park?
Yeah, I haven't played any of these
yet.
Dude,
you got to get out to some of these.
I know that one.
Okay. What's your favorite? What's your number one?
I mean, I really like the course that I'm at right now down here in Waco. They call it the Beast.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Not ranked on this list, just so you know.
It's not even on there? Oh,
nope.
Man.
Nope.
I like Toboggan, which is up in Michigan. That course was fun.
Okay.
That should be on there.
Yeah. Oh, Renegades Trail is in Michigan.
Burgess Park in Barnstable, Mass.
these are cool.
It's a world-renowned
course. These are some cool
Pebble
names.
Beach. Old Sawmill.
Let's just rank them off names.
Did you just say Pebble Beach?
Yeah, Old Sawmill. They got a disc golf course there.
Do they really?
Yeah.
This one, Sky High at Mountain High North. That's got to be fun.
That's a chill course. How many
highs can you get in there?
What's the best shot that you've ever – is it hit or thrown? Like, do you throw a shot?
Yeah, I guess so. There's a lot of lingo that comes over from golf that doesn't really make sense for what we do, right? Like, good putt. Like, we're not really actually putting. We're throwing a disc into the basket or – but yeah, I guess you would just say throw, good throw. People say good shot too.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. Do you guys have caddies?
Currently not because of COVID, but yes, some people will have caddies.
Really?
Some people will rock the roller cart, which I feel like you might be a roller cart kind of guy.
I would be a roller cart guy, but I was going to say, if you have a caddy, now your caddy's got to be fucking really blazed. Like that, to be a caddy? To be a disc golf caddy,
you should caddy for me at a tournament.
I will.
That would be wild.
Before
that would be wild.
That would be a lot of fun.
You might get thrown out, which would be that might be the controversy we need.
Yes. I mean, getting kicked out of a disc golf tournament would be that's life goals. Like we got kicked out of a dog show.
I would love
adding
it.
Disc golf. That would be perfect.
It. Bad boy of disc golf. What about what's the longest putt you've made?
I've made probably like 80 feet.
Whew.
80, 90 feet with the scuba, which is like my little putt that I brought over from Frisbee.
Okay.
You throw it upside down.
Nice. Yeah, because you also did obviously the trick shot. So you, like that had to have helped your learning curve when it came to disc golf, throwing Frisbees into a trash can at the campus at Florida, right?
I know, right? That was such a long time ago. But yeah, I mean, I think it helps with the imagination, like being able to just imagine different lines that a disc can travel.
Yeah, do you have like a signature celebration when you make a nice shot like that?
Oh,
the two finger salute.
I like that. Salute. That's like Mike Anderson, the Mile High salute, right?
We call it the scuba salute.
A scuba salute.
So this is called a scuba. That's how you throw it.
Yeah.
So you throw it upside down like that, and then if you make it, you just give the fans a little scuba salute action.
Do you have a fan club?
I mean, there's a collector page on Facebook. Those are the people that go nuts over the discs.
I think we need to make a fan club.
You got a YouTube.
I know you have a huge YouTube, but we need to make a fan club.
Yeah, you need a legion. You need an army behind you.
Right. The scuba.
Like Brody's and shit?
Brody's bros.
Yeah, Brody's bro with the scuba army.
I mean, I'm excited for when spectators come back, man. I'm excited to see what people are going to be showing up to. Because I think the sport, obviously with COVID and stuff, the sport has definitely blown up in the last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be nuts to see, you know, thousands of people out at these events.
They need to do a pro-am.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, pro-am would be good.
That would be sick. I mean, I can't really do that, but I don't have any children yet.
Yeah.
But you'll get there.
We'll just pretend that we're your kids. All right, so I had one last question. It's actually not my question. It's going to be a weird one, so be prepared. Okay. Our no longer intern, he's just part of our show, Jake Marsh, has a question for you.
Brody, do you remember me from Camp Laurel South in 2010?
Take a look. There we go.
My family, the Marshes.
Wait, you were a camper?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! You'll have to send me a video, a photo of you, what you looked like back then, because it's been what, 12 years?
Yes.
Yeah. In the room here, they don't think you remember me, but I know you remember my family.
Sounds like he doesn't remember.
The Marshes.
At all.
No, the Marshes down. What?
You were an Allagash.
Where were you in?
I was an eighth grader. My brother was Drew. He was also an Allagash.
Yeah.
My little sister, Janie, you like traded backpacks.
Janie,
with her
Janie? She's got my little backpack.
Yep.
Janie was like the smallest girl in camp.
Exactly. She was the, the youngest camper in the history of camp.
That's a fact?
I think she was super small. Yeah. Do they know about Camp Laurel South at all? Have you told them about it?
No, Brody. So this
they
how
know it, I went to camp.
Yeah. So bring it back.
It was literally the sickest camp that you could send your kid to.
See,
like it was something along the lines of like every 2 years they're like, we need to get new speedboats for the campers.
These
speedboats are too old. And then I think
the banquet.
They put in like a $500,000 tennis facility.
Yeah, that was the first year.
Yeah.
10 USTA official size courts.
Damn.
Dude, it was literally like you got free candy? Like
At
will.
That's normal at all camps.
Wait, so Brody,
I didn't know about that. I went to a YMCA camp. So it was a little bit different.
This is how it came up. We were talking about disc golf and Jake was like, oh, Brody Smith invented Ultimate Frisbee at our camp. And we're like, what? How is that? Like, what do you mean he invented it? So do you want to claim fame to inventing it at camp, whatever it's called?
Laurel South.
Laurel South.
I don't know if inventing might be the right word, but I brought Ultimate Frisbee to the camp. It wasn't an activity prior to me being at camp.
Got it.
People forget that Brody invented beast mode. You did this thing where you would like scream into beast mode before Marshawn Lynch did. You remember that? At Cove.
Yeah. I remember knocking down a tree with my shoulder going into beast mode. Yeah.
Yep.
Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff went down at that camp. That camp was fantastic.
See, he remembers.
That's awesome.
How about that?
Yeah.
I love it.
Jesus.
What a fucking weird world we live in.
Wait, is there a video game that you can play for disc golf?
Oh, we need that.
Yeah.
Really?
You guys need to download. It's an app.
Okay.
You should download it. It's called Disc Golf Valley.
Done.
And it'll start helping you learn the different flights of discs too.
Can I play as Brody?
I don't think that name's available anymore. You might have to go with like a Brody Smith 1784 or something.
Okay. This is sick. I'm going to play this the shit out of this. All right, so Brody, this has been awesome. Whenever you're next closest to the New York area, we have to go out and do a video.
Dude, we got to play for sure. I think it's one of those sports too. The better you get at tossing, throwing, whatever you want to call it.
No, like, tossing's cool. Yeah.
It's super enjoyable, but I'm glad you guys have some sort of interest in it. You know, I think that's dope. I appreciate it.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It's honestly, again, going back to the beginning, like I wouldn't have any interest in it if it wasn't called banging chains. When someone told me they bang chains, I was like, I got to get involved in this.
You're all about it.
Yeah, I mean, what's cooler than just going into the woods with some of your bros and banging some chains?
Hey, if you're really feeling it, we could maybe work out something where we get your actual banging some chains disc.
Yeah.
We could put the logo on a disc and everything, and you start tossing those things around.
Hell yes. Oh, I'm putting. Yeah. I'm doing putting practice right now.
There you go.
I'm going to bang some chains. All right. Bro. Oh, shit. This game is hard. Do you play this game?
No.
Oh, you do the real life? You don't. That was.
Yeah, that's nerd.
That was what was
the. He said put a jersey on.
No, it wasn't Steve Rutherford.
I was going to say, is that a Brody thing to say?
No.
Jay
I like
Feely.
It.
Jay Feely. I don't play video games. I play real life. we're all playing this game now. All right, Brody, thanks so much, man. We really appreciate it. Everyone go check out Brody on Twitter, on YouTube. Is it all just Brody Smith? On Twitter,
for the most
it's
part,
weird.
Yeah. I think it's Brody Smith 21. If you look up Brody Smith, I think that's an Australian football player.
Yeah, Brody Smith with an I and an E, not a Y. Yeah. So Brody Smith 21 on Twitter. He's got a YouTube channel. We're now part of, what do we call it? The Scuba...
Scoob's Army or the Brody's
Bros.
Brody's Boys
in the Scuba's Brody's Army.
Brody's Bros.
Inside of the Scuba's Army.
A division of Scuba's Army.
Right, exactly.
It's a name. It's a name in the works.
Yes. All right. Thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right, let's wrap up. We got Firefest coming up, but we also have Seamhead Express. Enough baseball news that we're just going to do a full segment on it. We're going to start with the New York Mets practicing winning the World Series. What a video.
You have to be prepared for everything, Big Cat. What's the saying that they always say? Like, every time you go to the ballpark, you're going to see something that you've never seen before. Well, yep, the Mets winning the World Series. They practiced it. Was it Conforto that made the final catch?
Yep.
So I kind of like this. I like this, if I'm being honest, as a fan of not the Mets, because they're probably going to be selling at the trade deadline. So that means that the guys that they will be selling have practiced potentially winning a World Series. So when they go to a team that's adding that last piece, the Mets have done all the prep work for you. So I like it.
I like it for a different reason. It made me realize that I have job security no matter what in life, in that every team and corporation should have on staff a person who essentially is just there to say, hey, will we get made fun of for this? And then you just put it on their desk and they can be like, yep or no. And that is what the Mets need to hire someone like that right now. Like Steve Cohen having to delete his Twitter was earlier this year. That was another case of it. But that's a job that we could do. We would actually be like, there are very few jobs that we are qualified for at this point in our career. It's pretty much just podcasting and blogging and that's it. But will the internet make fun of you for this is absolutely a job we could do.
Yes. As a hater, as a card carrying hater, we would absolutely be able to tell a team like, no, don't do this. I'll give credit to LeBron James and Space Jam. They took out the scene where LeBron explains consent to Pepe Le Pew, the rapist skunk. That was a good call. They had somebody on staff that saw that, and they're like, no, you know what? People are going to roast you for this. It's going to be a bad idea. Don't put it in there. The Mets absolutely do need some. Actually, no, they don't need somebody like that on staff because the Mets give us so much content. I'm not entirely convinced that the Mets aren't just like a content factory that happens to be also a baseball team. They're so good at providing us with stuff to talk about.
Yeah, this is why Trevor Bauer not going to the Mets was such a miss. It would have been the Avengers of trolling.
Yeah. Yes.
Damn.
It's a damn shame, but it's okay. I'm so glad that the Mets are around to do stuff like this, because if Trevor Bauer was taking part in this, like, Trevor Bauer would probably fuck it up on purpose, like trolling everybody, because he would be a guy that would tell you, don't do this, we're going to get roasted for it, because he is a troll. So if it was like a pop-up to him, he'd probably drop it and then tweet out, we were practicing winning the World Series, and I dropped it. Shit, we didn't win the World Series again. Like, he would have done another spin on it. So I'm actually glad that I like my Mets being pure.
All right, Seamhead Express number two. What do you got?
A dumb baseball injury. So Byron Buxton from the Twins, he cracked one of his teeth, so he's going to be out for a little bit. He cracked a tooth eating a steak.
What?
Yeah, eating a steak. It's probably that medium rare plus that Big Cat's always talking about. That's why you got to go rare or medium rare. Keep the meat soft.
I think the other way. I think the more you cook it, the more likely you're going to crack a tooth.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, the more you cook it, the more likely. So medium rare plus is too cooked.
Okay, you're saying, okay, that's too cooked. Got it. Yeah.
It's the plus that got him.
Yeah, I mean, medium rare plus, honestly, like, lives rent-free in your head and has been for the last 5 years.
No, it's just a weird thing to do. Now, Billy, as our resident meat expert, have you ever injured your mouth eating meat?
You probably bit into a bone. Didn't know that was there. That causes a lot of cracks.
Yeah. Yeah, although bones are pretty – if there's a bone in your steak, you know that there's a bone – it's pretty tough to miss.
Sometimes on some T-bone cuts.
It could have been a phantom bite. You ever do that where you like go to bite something and you've already, you know, like you almost miss it and then you crack your tooth on your tooth? That can happen.
Mm-hmm. This, you know what? This is what happens when they take chewing tobacco out of the game. Players mm-hmm. have just these candy-ass teeth. They're not used to just grinding their molars anymore. It's sad.
It's true. It's true. And then last up for Steamhead Express, what did you have?
We had something else on the Steamhead Express?
The minor league. What are they doing? They're getting rid of it?
Oh, yeah. The minor league rule changes. This is Mike Greenberg's dumb rules, way to stay relevant baseball. I actually like this rule. In AAA, they're making the bases bigger on first, second, third base. They're going from 15 square inches to 18 square inches. So I like that. I think it's going to pop a little bit more on camera. Those extra 3 inches, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, and more steals, more like the worst rule in all of baseball these days is the pop-up rule when you like get up off the bag and you're off the base for a split second and someone tags you. That's the most frustrating thing ever. So maybe a little bit more bag there. That won't happen as much.
Yeah, or make it like a softer bag, like almost a gelatin type bag, where your hand gets absorbed and ensconced by the base. So as you pop up, it sticks in there. Because yeah, I hate that rule, especially when they review it and you see your foot come off it for a half second. They're also doing a defensive positioning rule in AA, where the defensive team must have a minimum of 4 players on the infield, each of whom must have both feet completely in front of the outer boundary of the infield dirt. So 4 defensive players on the infield standing in the dirt at all times. And I don't know how I feel about that one, because I don't like the shift, but I do like it when they play a shift.
Like suicide squeeze.
Yeah, I do like it when they play a shift and there's one guy standing like 100 feet into the outfield. That looks hilarious. But yeah, I guess the suicide squeeze is back on.
Yeah, they're basically making minor league baseball like adult men's softball. Like that, these are rules that happen. You know, I'm for this. I agree. Like the shift has, I'll do it. I'll say it. The shift has ruined baseball. Let's be fucking Peter Gammons on it for a second. Let's be Tim Kirkchick. The shift has ruined baseball.
I think it's ruined baseball just because it's demonstrated that there are so many great hitters out there that are physically incapable of bunting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of just hitting something right down the line. And that is the most exciting play in all of baseball. At this point, when you can bunt against the shift, that's the coolest.
Yes, it's better than a home run. They're also limiting pitchers to a total of 2 step-offs or pick-offs per plate appearance while there is at least one runner on base, and that's in single A. That's in single A they're doing that. So I do love when the fans start booing pitchers for throwing like one pickoff attempt at first base. Mm-hmm. So I hope this doesn't stop that. I hope this doesn't curtail any of the booing. And then there's one other addition where it's in addition to limitations on step-offs and pickoffs, following successful pace of game rules testing among Florida State League teams, there are going to be 2 timers. There are going to be 2 timers that have new regulations beyond the current system to reduce game length and improve the pace of play. So they're implementing watches. Baseball has introduced Casio sports watches to the umpires.
That's so huge. So huge.
Yep.
All right, let's finish up. We got Firefest of the Week. Hank, you want to start us off?
Sure. My Firefest, PFT alluded to it earlier. I did my taxes. I filled them out. I did the right thing. I actually did them this year. Did them early, or so I thought. I thought I was doing the right thing, you know. And then I tweeted about it. I got this text from this kid, Brian, who's got an avatar and an AVI, if Billy were saying it, of him playing tennis. And the tweet said, "Why so early? The due date will probably be pushed back, leaving time to max Roths, IRAs, HSAs, plus income level for stimulus could have been in play." And I didn't know what any of that meant, but I knew I fucked up.
So that guy's just saying, why did you do your taxes so early? Because you probably won't. That would be very funny if Hank did his taxes early the 1 year that he doesn't ever have to do them.
Apparently, yeah. I mean, I this guy hit me with so many facts that I didn't understand any of them that I realized I fucked
but
up.
But here's the spin zone, Hank. You have more time to say, oh, I already did them.
True.
You get to, like, run up the score for even more months being like, taxes, did him already.
Also, a guy like that, when he's throwing like all these options at you, to have to sit down and figure out how much money you would save using each of those options and then deciding where to put your money, to me, that actually sounds like it'd be a waste of time is money. You'd probably come out losing overall if you sat down and actually did enough homework on what the smartest financial decision was. Sometimes saying fuck it and taking the easy way out is best for the long-term pocketbook.
Yeah, just buy Doge.
Yes.
Buy Doge, exactly. Buy Doge. Got my Doge right here.
Yes. PFT, what's your Firefest of the week?
My Firefest is we're fucked, boys and girls. Uh-oh. Part of my take is fucked because Rex Chapman is doing his own sports podcast.
Bruh.
He just announced today Rex Chapman, the king of Twitter, the king of engagement, is starting his own sports podcast. And we had a good run on this show, but I don't think that there's any chance that we can compete with Rex just saying, like, we don't deserve dogs, bruh, and then playing a clip of Hank talking about Normie's dick for 75 seconds.
I really...
Because he's going to crush us.
Yeah, I really hope he, like, leans into it and just it's a clip show of every other podcast. That would be so
It'd be amazing,
funny.
Wouldn't it?
That would be so funny.
Yeah. I would respect the hell out of it if he
Pods,
did that.
Pods, bro.
Pods, bro. How do you do an emoji, like, verbal? That's one thing we haven't done on this show. We do verbal memes, but verbal emojis?
You repeat it over and over.
Verbal emoji, cry face.
Skull.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Boom.
Sick.
All right, my Firefest is we're in the thick of March, and I was hot. I don't know if you guys saw, but I did get two lotteries in a row, and I thought that was going to be almost like the natural, like that was going to be the moment that my whole life changed. Turns out that's not true. So that's my Firefest. Like, I really did think, oh my God, I just, what Jake said, it was like 1 in 10,000 chance. I thought that was the moment that everything changed for me gambling luck wise. And I was going to be like the sharpest sharp of all time. Not even close to true. It lasted 24 hours. I went like, I won my next 5 bets after the lottery machine. So it wasn't like I was just thinking this. I actually was believing it too. And then it all crashed. So it turns out I'm a mere mortal.
You peaked too early.
I did have that. When Duke won last night, I had won actually 6 bets in a row off of the lottery machine. And I had that exact thought. I was like, am I just never going to lose anything ever again in my life? Mm. And then I lost Northwestern bet like almost 90 seconds later.
Yeah. I mean, historically, we're very bad at being able to tell when you should give up, when you should quit while you're ahead. Because you never know. Like, in the moment when you're ahead, you don't know how far ahead you are because you're always looking into the future. Like, when you're a little bit behind, you can tell exactly what you have to do to get back to being ahead. But then once you reach the front of the pack, you're like, I might be fucked. I might be about to get caught. So quitting while you're ahead never really made sense
to me. Nope. Agreed. Billy, your Firefest?
So my Firefest of the week, even though it is the first nice day of the year in the Northeast on this Thursday, some may say that the first nice day of the year is like taking Molly for those who have been shut in all winter. But anyway, I did a gamble today.
What was that, Billy?
Yeah, what's that like?
I don't know what Molly's like, but I think it's like the first nice day of the year. That's how it was described to me.
Yeah, by who?
By Twitter. Own brain? I saw it on Twitter. Anyway, I did a gamble today. I did a parlay, got back into gambling. I took South Florida plus 104, Oklahoma State plus 140, and then I had Syracuse plus 195. So this would have been a plus 1,300 bet parlay, and it all won. South Florida won, Oklahoma State won, and then Q's fucked me at the buzzer, and it would have cashed out huge.
Damn. Damn.
Damn, but we got 2 out of 3?
Yeah.
Damn.
Fuck. And a buzzer beater. Anyway.
2 out of 3, when you bet 2 out of 3 bro. Parlay and you hit money lines, like, that's actually the worst way to lose of all time.
I know. I mean, the buzzer beater on Q's, so that was a heartbreaker. And
Wait, was it you or was it your hedgehog?
My hedgehog chose them.
Oh.
So.
You haven't fucked that thing to death?
Well, anyway, also.
Somebody sent me this animal fact, so I want to make sure that I read it before Billy reads his. Did you know that chickens die after they have sex?
Oh.
That's not true at all.
Yours did.
No. What?
Yeah.
Well, you fucked it.
Anyway, also, I have an exam on St. Patrick's Day next week, which sucks.
Oh, man. That's terrible.
Oh, dude.
On a weekday?
Yeah.
That's such your luck. Also, we fucked up by, I think we were wrong again about Daylight Savings Time, Big Cat.
Yeah.
But it's going to be this weekend, but record scratch, the United States Senate is passing a bill saying that we're not going to do daylight savings time ever again.
Oh!
So your clocks stay where they are.
That was in the stimulus package, right?
Yeah. So be on the lookout. I think they're going to make an announcement in the next couple of days, but it looks like we're not going to be changing our clocks this summer.
Ever again. That's actually great, though, because that means we're not going to have to deal with, like, whenever we, in January, when it gets dark at, like, 4 o'clock, that's not going to happen anymore. We're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going on permanent Coughlin
time. That's fucking sick. Wow, that actually made me happier than the Molly spring day thing.
Yeah. What happens, though, like, I don't know how time works. Are we just going to forget that hour ever existed? Are we just going to be an hour ahead or hour behind of where we should be for the rest of eternity?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm fine with that.
Jake, you got any Firefest before we get out of here?
Yeah. So we talked about on Wednesday with Biz about how we called the Pick Whitney Cup video series coming soon. I got some bad sunburn from it. I'm starting to peel. So it's not ideal. But it was still worth it.
Where are you peeling, Jake?
Oh, no.
Ooh. Get some lotion on that.
I got to take care of it. So we'll see. Yeah. But I'll be okay. It was a fun time.
Also, Firefest, we forgot to mention that when we predicted Myers-Leonard apology, we never in a million years thought it would be him wearing his fucking sick-ass shades.
The Pit Vipers. Those were sick, weren't they?
Did he put that out?
No, I think so.
That was The Athletic. Yeah, it was The Athletic, and you could tell because it had the giant quotation marks upside down in The Athletic font. But those Pit Vipers were sick.
It was like, funny.
The Athletic did him a huge favor by putting that out there because then people just got mad at The Athletic for making such a ridiculous graphic.
Yes.
And people kind of forgot for a second about Myers-Leonard. But he's suspended for a week. I saw The Onion made a very funny joke about how he's getting circumcised. That was very funny and original of them to make that observation. Hmm. But he's suspended for a week. So that's the going rate.
Yeah. Billy, you want to hit the numbers? I'll go 98.
18.
32. Manatees-inspired mermaid myths.
8. Sailors liked them thick, huh?
The sailors were so horny.
Mm-hmm.
73.
Oh, we should have lied to Big Cat.
What number is it?
Again. What'd you say?
I didn't say anything.
What'd you say?
Oh, okay.
It's 99.
Oh, I said 98.
Oh, it's actually 73.
All right, we'll see you. Hey, Selection Sunday, John Rothstein.
This is Mark.
Get excited. We got Mark Titus on next week, too. It's going to be a great week, so get excited, and everyone have a great weekend.
Love you guys.